Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hills, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Wrap it up.
Hi, Jason.
Hi, Samantha Dawn Tutsalo. How are you today?
Today, I'm good. It's rainy here in the summertime, but we're doing okay. Hello, survivors. Thank you for tuning in to Survival Jobs, a podcast in collaboration with Broadway Worlds. Broadway. I'm Samantha Dawn Tutsalo, and this is my boy, Jason A. Coombs. Jason, how are you?
I am a little tired, but, you know, hanging in there, feeling a little bit like, I don't know, like, you know, the calm before the storm for some reason, like when you're like, when it's like very peaceful, but you know something might be coming. I don't know, but you don't know like how bad it's going to be.
There's definitely a storm coming. I'm currently in Connecticut and I'm planning to travel back to New York City this evening. However, if it's a mad storm, I'm not doing it.
Yeah, you should just stay. I was in New York City this weekend.
We swapped.
Yeah, right. But I was like, I was down by the South Street Seaport, which I don't really get to go down there as often. And it was so nice. I forget how nice it is.
And it was a gorgeous weekend, huh?
It was. It's right by the water. And I had gone to Pace University for a year, which is right down there. And like, I remember just being there and how much I loved it. So it was like my first New York City neighborhood. So I spent a lot of time there this weekend. It was really cool, really nice.
That's so nice. You know, Pace was my number one school. I wanted to go to Pace so bad.
Really?
Didn't get in. Barely. Oh. You know what's funny? I was visiting my friend Johnny in Rhode Island this weekend before I was in Connecticut. Johnny. In case anyone wants to know, like, my whereabouts.
Stalkers.
We were chatting a lot about how we literally got into no colleges. I got into... Because I'm not a good test taker. My SAT scores were so busted. Like I got into Hart, like I got into the Hart School of Music, but I did not get into the University of Hartford. Things like that happened a lot. So in conclusion, I didn't get into Pace, but that's funny because I would have found you anyway.
I know that's funny. Well, I only went there for a year, so maybe not. Because it was too damn expensive. So it was a little bit too expensive for me. My mom, even I got like a bunch of like scholarships, but it was like almost $50,000.
Yikes.
Wild, right? Yikes.
Yeah. Indeed. Yikes.
Anyway, that's so funny because I didn't get into like my reach school, which was Emerson in Boston. That was like my number one. I didn't even bother applying for NYU. I'm like, that's pretty pointless.
You're like, I guess I'll go to Pace. Meanwhile, I'm like crying, like, I didn't get into Pace.
Yeah, no, it was fun.
Jason, you know, we used to have this format in our mic checks where we would share a survival job story. And we have not done that in all of season two, since you and I are the survival job king and queen, obviously. And I've had 9 million. So, so I don't think I've shared this story on the show. So apologies to you faithful listeners if I have, but I really don't think I have. So there was this place on Columbus on the Upper West Side. It was like 72nd in Columbus, called like Columbus Tavern. Mm. And I got hired as a hostess. Mm-hmm. I went there for 2 days and I immediately quit because the chef, there was a crazy chef. He was French. And on my first day, I was literally training 20. I think I was 20. It was before I turned 21. It was one of the first jobs I had in the city. I was 20 years old. At this host stand on the Upper West Side, no idea what I was doing, full lied on my resume, like never really hosted before, like did at like a mom and pop Italian place in Connecticut. So like no true experience. And this French chef comes and throws like all of these tickets at me. Like, you know, like the tickets that go to the kitchen. Yeah, what are they called? They're tickets. I don't know what the word is.
Tickets. Yeah.
Yeah. Food tickets. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Threw them all at me and was like, I'm not even gonna attempt to do a French accent, and like screamed at me and said, Yeah, it was like, are you gonna get back here and cook all this food? Like, there's not enough help. Like, stop taking orders. And I was like, hi, my name is Samantha. It is my first day. I have no idea where I am. Like, I'm not gonna cook. To answer your question, no, I'm not gonna cook the food because I barely booked this host job. So eat a big D, you French man.
Yeah. Eat a baguette.
Yeah. That was good, Jason. Eat a baguette, bro. This establishment is no longer there. I recently walked by. I don't know what it's called now, so I'm not like talking shit on a place that is operating. But yeah, there's my story. Exactly.
Oh my god. Remember Keenan used to do the French guy
in
the
Yes, on Keenan and Kale.
Keenan and Kale. Oh my god. Kale's a vegetable.
Oh, I called him Kale with Cal. Keenan and Cal?
Kale.
Kel. Nope. Keenan and Kale.
J'étais beyond des UK, the last of the gay, fly and flatulence. I told you I had gas.
Keenan's like a legend. He's got a star in the Walk of Fame.
Legend. Oh my god, I saw that.
That's crazy, right?
That was iconic.
He's
iconic.
He's our generation, man.
Oh, man.
Okay, so before we jump into our amazing guest, Lisa.
Icon.
Iconic, legendary Lisa Lampanelli. I wanted to just throw some shade at that church. Wait, I should have looked at, I was reading the church that tried to get away with doing Hamilton. Can you
Yikes.
Believe that?
Yikes.
Oh my god, capital Y, capital I, capital K, capital E, capital S. Yikes. They are trash. Okay. They are the Dore McAllen Church. And they tried to do Hamilton. Woo! Oh my gosh.
Stress.
I was dying from laughter. Do you see those clips? I feel bad like laughing at people who were performers.
No, I have to tell
TikToks,
you.
Oh man.
Are they in a lot of trouble? I mean, yes, but like what happens now?
So on Broadway World, an article today, they have to pay for damages for the unlicensed performances of Hamilton. They had to issue an apology to Lynn and the Hamilton team. They said they are going to go forward to respect the copyrights of Hamilton's authors and contributors, and they're going to promise to never ever do Hamilton again, and they will destroy they would destroy any and all video or sound recordings and images of the unauthorized production or rehearsals.
Those videos are everywhere.
And request all members do the same.
They promise. My favorite part of that is they promise to never ever do Hamilton again.
Rightfully so. Like, come on, you can't. Like, okay. Ooh. I don't want to go on a tirade about the churches. I don't want the conservative Christians to come after me. But like, bro, don't be putting like gospel anti-LGBTQ stuff in your unauthorized work. Like, wait, what? Why are you adding sermons to Hamilton? Like, why are you like church separation of church and state? Separation of church and state. That's like literally what this country was founded on. People, come on. It blows my mind. Like, come on. Anyway, that's it. I'm going to sip my fucking mango pineapple drink. And
ooh, yum. That sounds good.
Try to de-stress. Yeah,
I mean,
smoothie.
It is so crazy that they did that. I have one more thing I'd like to plug before we talk about Lisa, who I love.
Are you going to do it, Hamilton? An unauthorized version of Hamilton and not walk.
You know what? I probably could. I probably know a lot of words. I probably could do a little clip, but I'm not going to. I'm not going to. I'm going to spare everyone.
It's a shot. Come on.
I don't want to throw away my and I'm throwing away my shot. You know what I'm saying? So real quick, I help with the events for this theater company called the Egg and Spoon Theater Collective. Jumped in and out and helped them for a few years. So I just want to shout out this weekend, they're having the world premiere of Randy's Dandy Coaster Castle. by Alexander Perez, directed by Rebecca Martinez. It's going to be at the Jeffrey and Paul Gural Theater at ART at 502 West 53rd Street from August 23rd through September 2nd. So if y'all want to check it out, go to eggandspoontheater.org. You can figure out how to get tickets on there, support, you know, nonprofits and new plays. By the way, it's a world premiere right there on 53rd Street. So that's just so shouting them out. Yeah.
There we go. Amazing. We have to support new work. You have to support untapped voices.
Yeah. They work so hard. And you know, it's sort of like, I was going to be like, it's sort of like what we do. We have our survival jobs and then our creative, but it's, I mean, they're doing a lot more work than we are putting on full productions.
Oh, yeah. I
mean, but, you know, all these people, to my knowledge, you know, all are doing the hustle and the game and still creating and bringing new work. So shout out to them.
Yes. Shout out to them. That's so exciting. I'm glad you're helping them, too. You're such a great event manager. So they're so fortunate to have you.
Well, I've been slacking. When they listen, I have been slacking, but I'll buckle up for the gala.
Fired.
I'll kill the gala. The gala will be lit.
And we have to say a quick happy birthday to our friend Tom Michael, who always listens to every episode. It's his birthday today. So happy 33rd birthday. It's Blooper Spot.
Today is, we're recording this little mic check on August 23rd. So happy birthday on August 23rd.
Yes.
And shout out to Robin De Jesus, our first guest ever birthday on October 21st. No, on August 21st. So we have a lot of survival jobs birthdays in August.
I know his birthday was the same as the day before Andrew Garfield's. That's so crazy.
How Broadway is that?
Yes. That's why he has such good chemistry.
How Broadway?
How Broadway. Anyway.
Lisa.
Queen Lisa.
Queen Lisa Lampanelli.
Yep.
Jason, tell everyone a little bit how Lisa came to us.
Oh, well, I got email from her a couple months ago inviting me to a reading at her house of our friend Robert Peter Paul's screenplay. And I was like, what? I was like, Lisa Lampanelli's emailing me?
This is pretty Broadway.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, I couldn't do the reading, unfortunately, because I was working on another film festival. Shout out to Female Voices Rock Film Festival. My submissions are open now. But anyway, I was working on that festival and I couldn't do the reading. But, you know, I responded back and I talked to Rob and I have read his script and it was really, really fantastic. Long story short, we're looking for guests for the film festival. And I was like, Rob, you think I could email Lisa? Would that be weird? We already like emailed a couple times together, but he was like, she's the nicest person ever. Email her. She loves to help. She loves to be part of things locally. And he said, just give it a shot. And I was like, okay. Long story short, she was everything he said she was and more, and has been such a kind and generous and thoughtful and really collaborative person who like wants to like do cute stuff, as you'll hear in the episode, right?
Cute.
And
yeah.
Cute. Crute. I like to say crute. She says cute. But yeah.
Yeah, no. And then we forced her, just kidding. Then she came on the podcast and we had such a great time talking to her, man. Like, this was such a great episode. She's so funny, but also so inspirational and real and vulnerable. And I love that she's just the whole package. And also, just so everyone knows, we're swearing this episode. There is some explicit language, so if that offends you, I would not listen any further.
Should we do her bio?
Yes.
Take it away, girl. You started off.
Got you. With a career that spanned more than 30 years, Lisa Lampanelli was a constant on the comedy scene. With numerous tours, Grammy nominations, and national TV guest appearances and specials under her belt, Lisa made headlines in 2012 when she lost more than 100 pounds with the help of bariatric surgery. The comedian went on to speak with unflinching honesty about her lifelong food and body image issues and prepared to make the transition from insulter to inspirer. She announced her retirement from stand-up comedy on the Howard Stern radio program in late 2018 and planned on dedicating her life to performing in storytelling shows, helping people as a certified life coach, and being a general, overall, skinny little badass.
I love that. Can she be my life coach? You should ask her that.
Yeah, seriously.
So next up for the comedy legend is Lisa Lampanelli, Big Fat Failure, a cabaret show filled with stories and songs. Yeah, that's right. Songs Lisa's going to be singing, y'all, in which the former queen of mean comes clean about all the things she effed up. So if you're someone who has screwed up more times than you can count, come see Lisa Lampanelli, Big Fat Failure, on Saturday, October 15th in Fairfield, Connecticut. There's two shows that evening. And they say misery loves company, but it dies in the face of laughter.
I love that.
I know, right? I'm away with words. Should we pop into it?
Enjoy, you guys.
Yes.
Hi, Lisa. Welcome to Survival Jobs, a podcast.
Shut up. You know, you love it. No. I love how, like, we've been joshing around and joking and cursing. Like, and then I'm like, before we hit record, and now it's like, hi, Lisa. Welcome to podcast where losers talk about things they used to do and probably will go back to doing after they fail.
I'm sweating.
Jason's here. Jason, how are you, abject failure?
You know, just a mess. Yeah. I just washed my hair, so it's all dripping everywhere. So there
it's
we go.
It's cute, though. She looked good.
You. Trying.
Yeah.
Yes. I feel like we're doing my normal spiel now. I think I'm going to get yelled at. I was going to say, we're so happy to have you.
Here's what I'm worried about. Does anyone even know this voice? Like, does anyone know who you're talking to and who's being so rude? I'm being so rude. Do they know who I am?
Of course.
We do a mic check before that you're not in. So we do a whole intro.
Bitch.
We set the whole thing up without you, girlfriend. Don't even worry.
Okay.
Yeah. So I just want to let you know. So everyone listening, we talked a lot about the Bridgeport Film Festival on a previous episode. That is where Jason and I met Lisa. And I want to say, I have been saying cunt so much since we had our interactions. And it's my new thing, I think.
Oh my God. I promised myself I wouldn't cry. I love touching people's lives and not their C's. So I'm really happy that I have shifted and changed. I mean, years ago when I was like saying it on stage a lot before I retired from comedy, people were like, oh my God, you've reclaimed the C word. And I'm like, yeah, it's not even offensive if you don't mean it. If you say it with love. So when people come up to me on the streets and go, oh, can you call my sister and call her the C word? I was like, happily. Because I don't know your sister, but chances are she is one.
Wait, why do people come up to you? Are you famous?
Well, I used to be. And now I'm just another loser. It's okay.
Like us on Survival Jobs, losers.
Which is great. Like, what's great is you guys are on the way up. I'm on the way down. So I think somewhere in between. I'm just the one who's already realized at my age, because I'm twice your age, that it's all meaningless bullshit and it doesn't even matter. All that matters is what a good person you are. And since I'm the best person you ever met, like, you're welcome.
No, you. I mean, you are
the best person I ever met.
Just so you know.
Oh my God. Lisa,
well, anyway, we are so happy to have you. We've been like, I said, I'm not ready to laugh today, so don't make me laugh.
I won't. And you know what I'd like to say? This has been 3 minutes and 23 seconds of two white bitches talking over a black man, and I don't like it. I would like to say, Jason, as a marginalized member of the population, on two counts, you must speak. I mean, you don't have to, because now it sounds like I'm ordering you to.
He has the first question, so
okay,
it works.
So let's let Jason rip, because Jason, you're the man, so you should be in charge. Because I'm really all about the patriarchy, okay?
Yeah, I'm going on mute.
No. It's exciting because, like Sam said, we met you during the film fest. And you've been just so sweet to us, and we really appreciate you making time. So thank you. But yes.
Of course. Well, I think we know there's a double-pronged reason. Double-pronged sounds like your nickname on Grindr. But there's a double-pronged reason for me coming on the show. Of course, the first is that I really do in my heart. I only do podcasts and radio stuff and stuff anymore because I'm retired, that I really like the people. Like, I don't bother with crap that I don't like. So I first was like, oh my God, great. We can do this and have fun. Yeah. And then I was like, wait a minute. I have this cabaret show coming up at Trevi in, Fairfield, Connecticut on October 15th. And I was like, oh, I can double prong them with a plug for the show. So I'm not stupid. Yes. Don't act like I'm stupid. Tickets are on sale now.
Yes.
August 23rd, they went on sale, and get them while they're hot because LL's going to sing. So you're out of love for you, but also ruthless self-promotion for my gay show.
Yes. We love that. We need self-promotion.
You're going to be singing? Oh, okay.
Dude, it's literally a show. And I think this really does apply to what we were talking about. The word failure is so tinged with negativity. And it's like such bullshit because I have been a huge success in one way, stand-up comedy. Also, I'm a great driver. Those are my only two talents. And I park well. And I think that goes under the heading of driving. So I have two talents. I do not suck D well. I do not. I do it wrong on purpose so nobody asks. I have been a failure at relationship, marriages, some friendships. I've been a failure. My book wasn't a bestseller. My off-Broadway play, yes, it had two runs, and it didn't make the money I wanted it to make. So I have all these other failures, personally and professionally. I'm like, let's write a show with some fun songs in it and some stories in it so we can, it sounds super dumb to say celebrate failure, but honestly, like if I don't, as a kind of a successful person on paper, talk about failure, how's any Joe Schmo on the street going to talk about it? Like, I think there's power in things like when Oprah talks about weight struggles. Like, when you see a powerful person who you think is a success talk about their failings, I think it helps people. And through this silly show about, you know, it's called Lisa Lampanelli, Big Fat Failure, I think, like, it'll help others feel not less than, because I felt less than for a long time because I couldn't make anything else work.
Preach. Yeah, that's why we love this show. Mm-hmm. Sorry, Jason, here I am talking over you again. Yeah.
Okay, no. White bitch, be quiet. No. I do mean her. But, yeah.
No, that's so true. I was going to say, like, have you read our prompts? Because that was going to be a question I was going to ask you later. But
No. I mean, that's what I loved about you. You're like, if there's anything you want to talk about or not talk about, let us know. And I'm like, I'm an open book. Like, I am the luckiest. My publicist is the luckiest bitch on earth because there will never be naked pictures come out that we didn't know about. Well, you also sure? I just never got naked ever. I shower with clothes on. So I'm like, I'm just kind of like an open book. So you just ask whatever you want, honey.
All right. So I have the first one. I'll start it off. Do you have a favorite survival job that you've had in your career that was like helpful for you, like, you know, getting into comedy and whatnot?
Well, I think it was really helpful that I didn't start comedy till I was 30, till I already had sort of a personality already. So I knew that I wasn't going to, I mean, I didn't know if I'd even like it. I said, let me try it once. And if not, you know, I won't do it anymore. At least you get to try it. But I remember, like, when I was a journalist before that, I'd gone to college for journalism to Syracuse. Again, I wasn't an abject failure in journalism. I just knew it wasn't my calling. So I remember doing those jobs and I was driving to see my first nephew when he was born. And I heard an ad on the radio because it always kind of in my head when I was a journalist, I was like, I want to try comedy. I want to try it, but I don't know how. And I heard an ad for this place called Rent a DJ, where you would go around and you would go and do DJ parties or weddings or school dances. And I go, ooh, I bet if I learn to talk on a microphone, I will at least take a step towards trying stand-up. So it's like a little step. Yeah. And thank goodness that I became really good at that. And they liked me. And I was like employee of the month once. And I go, okay, this is all a sign and stuff we have to notice on the way to the actual job that we want. Because if I had noticed I don't like talking on a mic, why bother? Do something behind the scenes or something. Yeah. So I think that was the most important survival job I had, And then obviously when you start comedy, you're making nothing. You're making nothing for the first 7 years or so. And I basically did crazy stuff, dude. Like, you would have been so proud of me. I wanted to be able to live near enough to New York City to run in, because I grew up in Connecticut, wanted to be able to run in and work the clubs if I could. So I remember answering an ad. This couple was 80 and 60, the husband and wife. They lived on a 35-acre estate in Mount Kisco, Bedford, New York. And they needed a live-in maid. Here I am with like a college degree and home grad school. And they just wanted you to clean 4 days a month for free room and board. And I was like, ooh, I can do that.
Wait, because 4 days a month?
Yeah. And I was like, I mean, it was like a crappy little maid's room with a non-private bathroom. But at the time you're 30, you don't really care. You're just like, oh my God, okay. I'm just going to work. Yeah. And actually working for them was really good for me. I learned a lot of humility. I learned that that job is effing hard. I worked, she was a taskmaster and a half, Mrs. Roland, because they were German, like off the boat. And I learned that Germans are the problem. Not all of them. No, but she was tough. And I remember actually having to learn to speak up for myself more and say, you're being too hard on me or whatever, you know? So I learned a lot. And I think the humility is a big thing, because after that, like, typing part-time didn't seem so bad. So I got rid of the ego of like, oh, I'm so educated, I can only do this. It's like, no, you know what? You like comedy enough that you'll do whatever it takes. And none of those jobs were really fun, but you learn stuff.
Yeah, for sure. The live-in maid. I mean, listen, I would do anything right now for free rent with the way these fucking rents are going up in New York.
Well, that's just the problem, because you're poor. Hey, that's why we would be friends in real life, but I'm not friends with poor people. So I'm so sorry.
So actually, just cancel us.
I would be friends with you because your good hair cancels out your shitty paycheck.
My poorness. Makes me look a little poor.
Yeah, look like you have a nice blowout. I'm just going to be friends with Jason so I up my minority count. Because I am very proud of my circle of friends is very diverse, but we can always add another one.
Yeah, that's right. You can.
It's like Charlotte on the new Sex in the City, whatever it was called, where she was trying to find, she had like no black friends to go to the dinner party.
By the way, that probably was me 10 years ago. Charlotte. I was always surrounded by gay guys. And I was like, wow, that's not cute. And I looked at my birthday party this year. I had 30 people over, which shocked me too, because I've really, since retiring 5 years ago, that's been my main focus, is attracting the right people, having like a really nice social network of people who really care about me. And I looked around, I was like, this is a diverse ass bunch of motherfuckers. And it's funny how I didn't seek it out. I just became open to everybody. And I think that's really when I watched that Charlotte thing, I was like, God, I'm better than her.
Jason and I love Che Diaz from that.
So do we?
We love.
Oh God, that's a story for another day.
That's another show. Do you have a story of a survival job that maybe you didn't love so much, that didn't impact you positively? That's like a shocking, scary survival job story. Maybe.
Well,
I
will say a funny story. So I'm working at this estate at Mr. and Mrs. Roland's house, and two things happen. Okay, I don't think they were blatant racists, but I don't think they shied away from a black joke now and again. And the only reason I say that is because I remember I walked in with their after dinner tea at one point. Imagine me with the fucking black outfit, certainly not a maid's outfit, but black pants, black shirt, with their tray of whatever the fuck they drank after, these entitled assholes. I go in there and she goes, oh, Lisa. I mean, they're long dead, so it's okay to say it, talk about them. She goes, oh, Lisa.
R.I.P.
Isn't it fun? If it was not for the 6 o'clock news, we would never see black people.
Oh my God.
But think about this. This is some bitch who probably grew up so fucking like sheltered and just like in on this sort of track that she had. Yeah. And I will be honest with you, I told that story on stage and used her real name to get back at her. So it was true. Ah, they're dead. But it's wild when you're doing that stuff, you're just kind of taking notes of what these people say to put in your act and make stories out of. So I liked kind of using anything I had at the time to get some material. Cause I always thought, wow, my real life is more funny and effed up than anything I'm observing on TV. Let me just talk about it.
Yeah. I mean, I want to say, I think you made a survival jobs history today. I don't think we've ever had a maid.
By the way, I'm probably, I don't know, maybe you have had some, but they're ashamed to say it. I just never felt like you should be ashamed of anything. Like, my parents were stoked about that. They were like, that's great. Like, I just, and also my parents never put any pressure on us to be successful, which is why I think we were. So it was never like we didn't live up to anything. So when they're like, oh, free room and board, go for it. That's really cool, you know?
I love that. I have a random question because I was researching you, of course, and I saw something that said that you didn't watch comedy specials growing up.
Never.
Until you became a comic.
Well, by the way, there was no such thing as comedy specials growing up. There was, people would do the occasional set on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson or this or that. And they'd have things like the Rodney Dangerfield Young Comedian Special, which with like five or six different guys, but like it wasn't even interesting. Like I never even, it never dawned on me that I liked comedy because I didn't. I liked the roasts. They had these things called the Dean Martin Celebrity Roasts. My parents and my sister and brother and I would just watch them and laugh so much. And it just looked like, which they weren't, by the way, it looked like they were all just friends hanging out, throwing these jabs at each other. And I was like, look at that. How friendly and fun. And then you find out years later, like with the Golden Girls, like they all fucking hated each other. So it's just a fantasy we have. But yeah, I never watched stand-up, didn't have any interest. And I think it just was something that I liked, that whole roast situation and the vibe, which I guess that's why I naturally, once I started stand-up, gravitated towards that stuff.
Yeah. Wow, that's so interesting.
That you just fell into it. I don't want to talk about myself since this is about you, but my senior thesis paper was about women in comedy and like how it sucked as like a woman coming up and trying to do this. So do you have some experiences you can share, like your challenges coming up in this industry as a woman?
Well, I mean,
predominantly like male heavy.
I mean, like I usually have a different story than most people because I was really tough. My act was tough. I wasn't tough on the inside, but I presented that way. Also, I wasn't a typical, you know, I wasn't beautiful, sexy, all that stuff. I was just like this funky, like weird, like she dresses like, you know, with those 50s housewife dresses. Like I didn't present like I was going to threaten anyone, but my mouth was so threatening. And sounded like such a guy that I got booked all the time. Like I have been the luckiest person in the world never to get Me Too'd, never to have been harassed. Maybe somebody didn't hire me because being a woman, but I never found out about it. Yeah. But I think like I probably, the biggest challenge with me was comics being mean to me, but they were just peers. So it was just hurt feelings. I don't think it was anyone blocking anything. So I got really lucky in that those experiences, those horrible things that happened to women didn't happen to me. And, you know, me and Joan Rivers would joke around about that, like after the Me Too happened and be like, why not me? And then it's like, Joan, I mean, and I'm fully admitted that how fucking blessed and lucky we are.
Yeah.
Because I don't even, you know, we've all had some childhood stuff, some traumas. All my traumas have been with a small T, thank God. So I think I've been pretty lucky and kind of skated past stuff I probably wouldn't have been able to come back from.
Yeah. You think because you like had this like aggressive mouth and like confidence that you just booked.
Well, I've talked to my manager about that and she's like, yeah, you were just like I remember there was a club in the city. It used to be the premier club for like people who they thought were going to be unique and different. This club has since kind of turned into more of a road club. But when the comic strip in my era in the 90s was big, it was like, oh my God, if you were allowed to perform there, they had faith that you were going to get a sitcom someday about yourself or whatever. So I remember getting passed to work there and it was so exciting. And I remember the booker at the time was really tough and he just loved talent. And if people were bombing, he'd be like, go in there and fix that. So I liked the, she can go in and kill anywhere and never afraid to follow anyone. I had to follow Chappelle consistently at the Cellar every night in the 90s. I didn't care. Cause I was like, oh, they're going to be on a high. They're not going to be like looking at me to match him. They're going to be looking at me to heighten it. And it was just like such good practice. Like I say to every beginning comic or like a comic trying to make it, I'm like, never complain, never explain. Don't explain your jokes. They have to stand on their face. And if you think it's okay to say they have to, you know, you live and die by your joke, but you can't complain either. You can't go, oh, so-and-so bumped me. Oh, Bill Burr stopped by the club. Yeah, guess what? Then I guess you're going to have to follow Bill Burr. So suck a dick. Like, I don't mind complainers in real life if they're working on stuff like we all do. But the, oh, poor me, victim of like so-and-so stop by. I'm like, yeah, well, so live with it. I don't think that leads anywhere good.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Totally.
Well, also speaking of theses, you know, it's really interesting. I found there's this woman, I think I still have the paper, she sent it to me. She was doing her thesis for some reason, a grad thesis on me, right? And it was at the time of my height. And I was like, wow, that's pretty cool. And when she asked me like my biggest accomplishments after I rattled them off, she's like, wow, that's interesting. I'm like, what? And she's like, none of them had to do with career. Every single thing you said had to do with real life. So it really was called to like, yeah, I find making my first, you know, Easter dinner for the whole family, having game night every week, doing this, that's more important to me. So it's sort of was a wake up call of like, oh, that's what I actually value. Let me work on that stuff more. So I don't think it was a surprise that like 5 years later, I was like, oh, I'm not fulfilled by comedy. I'm going to kind of like stay home more and actually connect with people. So it's just very interesting when you mentioned theses is that, you know, first of all, I'm shocked you even have an education. Real happy that you didn't interview me because you don't deserve it. So
I used like a bunch of shitty books. I didn't interview anyone, which is
that's all right.
The problem.
Well, you going to DeVry didn't help.
Hey, Jason and I went to state school together. Okay,
I'm proud of both of you because you know I used to have a podcast and one of the guys would always argue that it doesn't matter where to go to college. Unless it's, you know, if you're going to be a doctor, a lawyer or whatever. And I would argue that it doesn't even matter if you go to college. Like it is so overstated about this track that we have become convinced we have to get into debt for. And I'm like, yeah, I think it's okay to not do that. So proud to see you all thrown away all that money. And now you're talking to me. Nice. I'm happy for you.
At least I got Jason. At least we got each other out of it.
That's a good part, right?
You know, that's about it.
I haven't paid my student loans in years. I'm just like,
oof. Me either. The pandemic, I'm like, I'll take the next.
No, do it. Do it. I saved mine off till I started making really good money and then just paid them off. So guys, clearly Jason's going to make it and then he'll pay it for both of you. And you, my friend.
She said, let's remember this, that you just said you're going to pay my student loans when you make it big.
Hey.
What day is it? August 13th. Thank you.
That's hilarious. Okay, Alisa, Chevy Chase was your first like major roast, right?
Well, I would call that a minor roast because it was so bad, except for me and a couple of others. They rerun it like once every 10 years because Chevy... biggest douchebag on the planet. And again, I'm sure he was in some kind of emotional pain and that's probably why he wasn't nice, but he made it very difficult for people. But I was like, well, it's my shot. Like I remember leaving my apartment. I had a little studio in the city. It was the first place I bought and it was so cute. And I remember leaving that day and it sounds like so silly, but I like looked back and I was like, okay, when I come back into this apartment, my life will have either changed for the better or definitely the worst because I'll either kill or I'll bomb. And it's such a violent profession that we use words like kill and bomb as standard. You know, it's an insane occupation. So thank God it went really well for me. But Chevy just legit wore sunglasses, stared straight ahead, didn't laugh at anyone. But I got a smile out of him because I stuck to my guns because I wanted to do well for me, not for him. And it shifted later where the guys were great sports. Like even Trump, believe it or not, who obviously I'm not a fan of.
Wait, who? I'm kidding.
Yeah. We don't say that.
Don't worry. He's hopefully by the time we release this, hopefully in a different country. But he actually was a good sport. Flavor Flav was a good sport. David Hasselhoff. So those people, you want them to have fun. Yeah. But with Chevy, it was just like, this is my, either I get invited on TV to do this again or no. So thank God that went really well. And that was kind of the start of everything.
Did you like, were you like, did you put pressure on yourself? Were you like really nervous, like going into it or like?
Well, I'm so hardcore with preparation that I was like, I literally remember where I was sitting in that apartment when the Friars Club, who was one of the producers at the time, called me and they said, we made Comedy Central put you on the roast because they were a producer.
Wow, yeah.
And they're like, we don't know who she is. Cause I was not new to comedy, but I was never on TV before. And they were like, well, we'll give her a shot. And I remember just literally without blinking, got on the phone to the stylist. Where do we go shopping? Got on the phone to my writing team. When do we write? Scaring up all the prep, booking some open mics where I would go and I'd say, all right, you're going to pretend you're Chevy Chase. You're this one. You're that one. You're this one. I'm making fun of you. We got to see if these are good, you know? So I'm not a nervous person, but afterwards I have like, I get sick. I get like emotional sadness because it's over. That probably is more, I just get too much. I get way into, let's go. No fucking time for feelings. Like my generation, you guys, I mean, I'm 61. I have a lot of millennial friends who I love. And I go, we didn't talk about mental issues. We didn't say mental illness ever. We just like, we're like, what? Overwhelmed with that kid? Push forward. That's not good. But I will say it made me not ever be like hesitant. And it made me just be a kind of a badass, but kind of, you know, the other way is kind of a little bit better to admit you need help.
Facts.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like mental health is still like people get shivers talking about it. And I'm like, hello, like go to therapy because everyone should.
Yeah.
I would be in the street. I would be in the middle of 10th without Joanne, my therapist. Like it's so important to talk about and say like, hey, like I feel fucked up this week. And so I need to go to a lot of therapy and like also take a mental health week. Thank you. Goodbye. Like,
well, that's the thing.
Good.
I say to my friends all the time, and I think there's a reason I'm friends with a lot of people between 30 and 45, because they get that. Because I started therapy when I was 25 and like on and off for the last however many years. So I think it's so amazing and it's scary. And even over the pandemic, the last 6 months or so, I was like, oh, I want to see this trauma therapist to, you know, process some childhood stuff. And again, small T stuff, like just school stuff or being ignored, parents, because no matter how you're raised, you could be raised by the best parents in the world. And there's something that happened as far as they turned away to look at the stove for that. And that's in the kid's head. So you're going to need help sometimes. And I think that's why I like this age group, because my age group is still that hardcore push forward. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, ooh, I guess not. So for a while I was calling myself the world's oldest millennial because I feel like I get that. Yeah, I think millennials are great. Gen Z, Gen X, it's just all fucking people who are more awake to this stuff. But with things like TV appearances, my first call was never to the shrink. It was always to the writers, to the stylists, to the makeup people, to the, let's get this fucking shit started.
Yes, well, businesswoman.
What's that?
That's a good businesswoman. Like,
I always thought comedy was 50% business, 50% art. And a lot of people don't, but I'm like, oh yeah. But dude, the funniest thing was too. So I get this great outfit. It's my first like expensive outfit and I'm not rich yet. I'm like kind of like going, oh, there's like some money in savings, but I got to pay that back. You know, I was always the type very good with money because my parents were Depression era. So I'd always go, okay, if I took $1,500 out of the bank to buy that dress and all that stuff, I got to pay it back to savings. So I was always obsessed with that. So what happens with the roast? It's this really cute outfit. I love it. I'm leaving the apartment. As I said, my friend Gay Wendell was with me because you always have to have your gay with you.
Gay Wendell.
Well, his name was Wendell. So we walk out and I hear clink, clink. They fucking forgot to take that white big tag off the dress.
Oh, no.
Dude. Oh, the one that you need the machine for?
Yes!
And you know.
Lisa, did you steal it?
No. I mean, no. I'm white.
Yeah.
So I get in the car. We're getting driven. Comedy Central sent a car at the time. We haul ass. Thank God I was living right near 2nd Avenue and 3rd. And we drive up. We literally run in with the receipt. They cut it off while I'm going there. They were closing in 10 minutes. It's so dramatic.
Wow. On the way to the roast?
I'm anxiety. Literally me too. I don't think I've ever told that story before because I blanked it out. That was one of my small T traumas. So
I give that a capital T. Okay.
Yeah, it was insane. So thank God it all worked out, but it was so funny. I was like, wow, if that's the worst thing that happens tonight, I guess we're okay.
Yeah. I mean, the anxiety, like on the way to this gig already. And then you're like, wait, what is happening?
But again, I think that's the thing too. In those days, you guys got to understand, we didn't even use the word anxiety. It didn't exist. Mm. It was like we went to, what the fuck do we do? Let's go. Well, and the problem with recognizing anxiety or stress or anything is you're always yelling. So I had a huge anger problem, which I still have to work on all the time. And now I find I worked on anger a lot, so I cry more, which is obviously way healthier. But literally, if I'm in like yesterday, I had to call my landscaper because I felt we should go over the bill and he wouldn't come over because I don't know what happened. He's sick. And I'm like tearing up because I want to pay him. He's not rich, but I don't want to get ripped off. So instead of yelling, I notice like I'm emotional thinking about it because I want him to get paid. So I'm like, fuck. So I'm like, is he going to hear me like a little emotional? And I'm like, well, fuck it. I don't care. Isn't it better than me yelling at him? So that's where my anxiety used to go to yelling. Now it's more acceptable to me to show like the sadness.
Yeah. And
I don't want you to feel like I'm ripping you off, you know? So ends up, of course, we agree. I give him the cash. His wife stops over. Everything's fine. But all that to say, you didn't cry back then. You fucking yelled and you made a lot of enemies and I made a ton of enemies. And I'm like, wow, if I could go through my life now and not yell and just show the realness, then am I a big pussy? Yes. Good. I guess I am. But yeah, you know, but it's sad.
It's good to be vulnerable and open, which sort of leads into my next question of like, you did dabble in some films here and there. Like, did you ever want to do more acting? And by the way, like now the way you are, you're just so open. You literally just cried tapping into your feelings. Go book a movie. would you ever want more?
My friend who introduced me to Jason is this guy, Rob Peter Paul, who's a really, really good actor.
We love him.
Rob's going to be in my show October 15th. Yeah.
Amazing.
Did I mention October 15th?
We'll talk more about it for sure.
The link in Jason's bio. Seriously, like Rob, when I go over and he helps me a little with like storytelling and stuff, like because I just talk into the recorder and he asks questions for stories for the show. He goes, oh my God, I saw your Two Broke Girls. I saw you in this movie or whatever, like this little thing or whatever. And he goes, you know, you're really good. You should really do that. And I'm like, yeah, but I kind of like don't want to. Like, there's this weird thing when you just do stuff if it tickles you. Like now it's like, if it tickles me, I'll do it. Like if my manager calls me, you know, and says, oh, so-and-so wants you to do this. And I'll go, oh, that sounds cute. So I literally judge everything by, does that sound cute? Like, I forget what, like even your podcast, I was like, that sounds cute. So we got offered a reality show based on me. And the description wasn't cute. So I rewrote it. And I was like, well, if they want the cute one, the one I want to do, then we'll pitch it to a network. And so they did. And so we're in that process. But I'm like, if it doesn't sound like it'll tickle me a little bit, I don't want to do it. So if someone said, do you want to do an off-Broadway run of dot, dot, dot? If it was a silly little one song, three lines of dialogue, show stop, like Pippin's grandma thing, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Sure. Because that's easy, fun. But I don't know. There's something if it doesn't. Just my father had the greatest saying. He was a fine artist. And he'd go, just because you're good at it doesn't mean you have to do it. And I fucking love that. It's very freeing.
Yeah.
But I think it's obvious that I'm the best actor who's ever lived. So that being said, maybe someday.
Yeah, I can't believe. Where's the Oscars? Give her
an Emmy. Wait. Well, you're going to laugh. I cannot memorize. I have this thing where I literally can't memorize. I don't know what. It's just, I guess, a skill you develop as an actor. But I never did. I just knew my set and I did it. So I got offered to do a pretty weighty play about 6 months ago. And it broke my heart because it was in a real legit theater. And when I got that script, I started crying. I was like, it's all heavy dialogue that was so written in my voice, but it was so much. And I had to call the producer and the casting people and just go, I want to explain why I can't do this. It's because I can't memorize. And they're like, no, we'll get you a coach. I go, no, you don't get it. Like, you would murder me. I would kill myself and you. I have to bow out. And they took it as good to be honest. And they said, if you ever want to do something at the theater, let us know. And I said, yeah, if you have three lines, I'll fucking do it.
But you see, so Broadway.
I don't think that's going. I think that's going. I know my limits now.
Yes.
And if it becomes important to me later, I'll work on it. But right now, that would have ruined their show and really made me, I hate to use the word, but anxiety ridden for months.
Well, at least you know, like, your strengths and weaknesses, and also how blessed and, like, in such a great place in your life. You're like, if that's not cute, I'm not doing it. Like, I feel like many people have to just yes their way. And that's, like, really amazing.
Well, but I get that comes from a lifetime of being good with money and saving. And not everybody has that privilege. It's a privileged thing that you get. So I'm not saying I made it because I'm lucky. I was fortunate. I was good at comedy and I was smart enough. Thank God for my parents. We're like, you save. So I could step away and go, this doesn't feel right anymore. I'm not into it. It just doesn't feel like I like that type of comedy anymore. So it is a privileged place to be, but it's also even little decisions of turning down stuff that doesn't feel exactly right, even if you're in scarcity mode. So if you're like a beginning actor and you're like, well, I want to grab that because I really need the money, but that guy seemed a little creepy. And it seemed like I didn't want to do the, you know, take my top off, whatever it is, or I didn't want to say these words or something. It's almost going, two more shifts at the coffee shop would be more perfect for me than that. So I'm just saying, even if you're not in a privileged position, please don't force yourself to do stuff that makes you sick or sad or in danger.
Right. Go take a shift with the Germans. I forgot the name.
But if a bitch like me can clean houses with some graduates, I love that I always have some graduate work. Because I was in a program at Columbia. Get this. I always shot really high with education. So I was at Columbia. I did a summer program at Harvard and a summer program at Yale. And I'm telling you, I am never smart enough to get accepted for the whole year. It's just the summer.
Just the summer.
More than most.
Ivy League moron. They won't let me in, but they'll take my money for 6 weeks.
I love
Ivy League moron.
Lisa, your comedy album, Back to the Drawing Board, was nominated for Best Comedy Album at the 58th Annual Grammy Awards in 2016.
Yeah, but guess what? Listen, here's what I'm going to say to you, Mr. Bad Researcher. I was nominated twice.
Oh, was that the second one?
Yeah, the first one was for
Mr. Bad Researcher.
Okay, so it was for my HBO special, Dirty Girl. And I tell you what, you have never been more miserable than at an award show.
Oh, no.
It is horrible. It is only fun if you don't take it seriously. I knew I wasn't going to win both times because you just know because you don't campaign.
Who
it was
won?
I didn't even know there was a comedy award. Like I was just like, yeah. But the first one, I had so much fun because I flew everybody to LA, my parents, my sister, my niece, my brother. And I was like, oh, this is so great. We all stayed at this really, really fancy hotel. And then it's this exhausting thing that doesn't feel good, except again, the dinner with the family, the leaving the Grammys early and coming to a hotel and putting the robes on, sitting with the family, the breakfast with the family. I'm like, what the fuck? So the second time I got nominated, you would be so impressed. First of all, I had forgotten that that album came out. So I was like, cute. Well, I was like, I'm not going to this fucking thing. But then I remembered, because my father had just passed away and he was like my favorite person. So it was very difficult. But so I go, wait a minute. If I go and I take my little niece and nephew only, they were like 14 and 13 at the time and so cute. And we all take some of my dad's like suits and have them made for like red carpet, like made by a tailor into like garments.
Oh, I love that.
We could just have so much fun, the three of us. And that's the way to do the Grammys is when you go, you don't take it seriously. You have such a good time and you're with those right people and kind of representing this thing we wanted to put out there. So, yeah. I mean, again, it's so hard to listen to this, I'm sure, as a struggling actor or somebody and go, yeah, well, you know, you get to do that because you were famous already and stuff. It's like, yeah, but just do stuff that feeds the soul. Yeah. In every part of life, if you can, no matter if you are yet to make it or you've made it and are now considering yourself on the way down, there's ways to get that soul hit that you need. That's how I feel.
Yeah, for sure. So would you say that that's like the main reason you retired, because you were like, I need to put all my energy into the things that matter?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say a bunch already. I wouldn't say all of it. I'd say much more.
Yeah.
Like I have 8 nieces and nephews. I missed
8.
I missed maybe 2 birthday parties and 2 holidays. Like I really was hardcore. My brother wrote me a note once about different things about me and that were good. And he was like, you always came to everything, even if it was like an all nighter. Cause I would fly in and drive to that party.
Oh my God.
So I was always dragging myself around, but I go, if you're finding that you don't want to do it anymore, you don't have to do it. So it always felt like I was going to these gigs the last couple of years. I was like, I don't really love it. Like, it's fine. And I go, I want to do something that's just not just fine. Yeah. That whole like energy was shifting. And also I had started working on that. It really doesn't make you a better person to be a success. And its accomplishment really doesn't feed the soul like I thought it would. So I think those things that started happening, I'm like, oh, I can get out of this and still be a human and see how that works. And by the way, that's followed with a huge amount of sadness about who am I? I don't even have an identity. And then after all the work on myself, I was like, oh, I'm just a person. Oh, that's cute. Okay, I could just have fun. And I don't have to do anything ever again for approval. But that's, yeah. I mean, again, 3 years of hard work on post-retirement, what's up? So yeah, it's not easy, but it's worth it.
That really is so admirable to listen to that. And I think it's really important for our listeners to hear it. Like, hey, like, yes, we all are artists and we all have these dreams and goals and passions, but that's not the end all be all. Like there is life past that. Yeah. And there's so much pressure, especially on young artists to like have this major success and like be rich and famous, but like, does it matter? Yeah, sure. But like, not really, like not entirely.
Yes, I think we don't need much. I think we need a place to live. I mean, I always think about that little studio apartment and I'm like, that was like, I love that place.
Where's it at? Is it for rent?
It's in there, right? It's in Tudor City. Tudor City is so cute. It's this little, I was such a baller that I literally bought it right after 9/11 because I knew everybody was moving out. And I was like, yeah, I'll fucking buy it. I found, get this, it was a studio in a luxury building for $119,000. I mean, it was hilarious.
Wow.
So, and again, I was privileged enough to be making money, privileged enough to have my parents co-sign because it was a co-op. So yeah, my life has been easier due to several privileges. But the point being, if you start, just become a noticer of your life. If you start to notice that every Thursday you're miserable because you have to pack to go away, if you notice that every day you go, I used to love the stage, but something shifted and I don't, and I want to do, you know, behind the scenes. Working in Starbucks feels better because I'm connecting more than a stage that's people are 7 feet away. Whatever it is, it's like, you don't have to act on it. Just notice it so you know how to move forward. Because if we don't notice, which I didn't, then you have like a major snap where you're just like either an emotional snap, or I had an outward snap where my second to last show, I really snapped on stage. And I was like, thank God I'm retiring and that I saved all my money because this could never fucking happen again. So yeah. We didn't notice enough back in the day. So I hope people can just notice what they love, what they don't, and just, you know, they can get clues about what they want.
Yeah. I think the pandemic has done that for a lot of people, right? Like,
yeah,
having your whole world shifted because of this thing that was out of our control. And then, I mean, that worked for me and Samantha. We were like, we're not going back to working in a restaurant no matter what, you know? So like,
yeah.
And we sure did not.
Yeah. And you notice that wasn't feeding the soul. And again, we're lucky enough to be able to say that, you know, sure. A lot of people have to do it. And then unfortunately, I mean, there's just so much systemic bullshit that keeps people stuck, and everybody loves it that way, you know, because it keeps the wrong people down and it's really annoying. But by the way, I didn't know any of that shit either because I was just so single-mindedly focused on not being a success money-wise, but accomplishments might give me self-esteem. I didn't notice that there's people around me not having a great life because of systemic bullshit. So it's good when you open your world a little more than to just what I'm going through, or, you know, for sure, as an artist, there's other more important stuff too.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Well, Lisa, we're coming to the end of our interview. We have one more question.
Oh my God.
And then we're going to play a fun little game. I know you talked a bit about the show at the Trevi Lounge, but if you could do like a big spiel about it so everyone knows what's up, where to get tickets, etc. We'll also drop all the info. And then Jason will close us out with a great question and then we'll play.
Yay. Oh my God. Thank you so much for like saying, you know, that I could promote the show, because I always do shoehorn it in funny ways, but thank you for letting me get the details out. It's going to be two shows, Saturday, October 15th at 7 and 9. There are very few VIP tickets left. We're doing meet and greets with 30 people only each show, where they get to actually stand next to me and have me acknowledge them and take a picture. I mean, the little people love that stuff. And so it's a small venue. There's only like 100 seats. So it's selling pretty well.
We love Trevi.
Yes, it's cute. And they're really kind there. It's in Fairfield, Connecticut. Don't worry. It's a good neighborhood. You get ass play on the way in or out unless
ass play you're
there. Jason's going to be there doing that for me as a VIP.
Yep.
And the tickets, just go to my Instagram, which is Lisa Lampanelli on all platforms. If, by the way, you cannot spell my name, you do not deserve to come to the show. So,
like I did when I first.
No, that's okay. I forgave you. But yeah, just go there and get tickets on the little link there. And we will hopefully see you at Trevi. And get ready. I'm going to sing. I'm going to not dance. I'm going to emote many emotions. Yes, we are. Ow.
I'm offended that I'm actually really offended that only Jason got called out to come as a VIP, but it's okay. No worries. Thing,
he's ass playing. So that's
You have to ass play, Samantha.
You strike me as a real prude. I'm just saying. not to prude shame, because you know, prudes need love too.
I'm crying.
I'm choking. I'm on mute because I'm like choking.
Lisa, little do you know.
I know. I was going to say, usually it's the innocent ones. The ones who look innocent are big, dirty hose bags.
Big ass play. Big ass players.
I'm going to throw up.
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. Okay, so I have one last question for you.
Yes.
So, like we talked about this whole time, you've had such a huge legacy, Lisa. You've basically done it all. Stand up, comedy specials on HBO, Broadway, live albums, TV, movies. You wrote a book. You've been an LGBTQ advocate. Is there, like, what do you want people to remember you by? If you, you know, can have people just remember you by one thing, what would it be?
That I kept evolving, and that shit that, suppose I checked into a hotel and I wasn't particularly nice to the hotel clerk because I was tired. No excuse. Didn't get any sleep the night before because we had to go from city to city to city. And if I was like, you're kidding. Why is there noise? Like, that was me for real. I would hope that they would maybe in a new encounter go, oh, she grew. She was, you know, angry or sad or had something going on. And so I just hope people could go, oh, she grew and she changed and she didn't want to do the type of insulting humor anymore and didn't want to use racial slurs. You know, she didn't want to say super sexual stuff anymore. And she grew and now she's different. So I hope people just allow room for my growth. And that would be great.
That's so important.
Yeah.
That's so important.
You're so cute.
I know.
Person, you just fucking
Well, I told you this before. I met you like a long time ago at Starbucks. I don't know if you remember in Trumbull Center. I used to work there, and you were always so kind. And you, I was, I remember they were like, "That's Lisa Limpinelli," and I was like, "Really? That's Lisa Limpinelli?"
And I do, believe it or not, I do remember you because you were always really nice. Yeah. And I was never, by the way, cunty at Starbucks. I was like, no, I was really nice.
Getting your coffee.
Now, even when I hadn't processed my anger issues or worked on them much, 90% of the time I was always pretty good. But I think also that's part of the problem when you're talking about anger is that you're pushing down, asking for what you want. And then suddenly you explode on the wrong person. But I'm so happy I wasn't mean to you at Starbucks. I was probably so fucking happy to be having many coffees that I was like, oh, I can forgive Jason's mistakes.
He forgot the extra espresso or something.
Right. Put a pump of sugar, pump of vanilla.
Yes.
So for our game, since you are the queen of roasts and meaning, we thought we'd like to take a turn and give toasts and nice kind words to celebrities. So Whoa. We're going to do like a rapid fire toast.
Okay, so I'm going to have to try to find something nice to say about Oh, God. Okay, good luck. I'll try not to go into old bad habits. I'll try to be nice, okay?
Yeah, let's see. Let's see if we've evolved. Let's see if we've evolved like the legacy. Jason, you want to take the first?
Sure. Let's start with Hillary Clinton.
Oh, I love her. I say, don't lock her up. What up with that husband diddling that other lady and many more and a cum shot on a dress. You know, no wife should have to put up with that. I say, don't lock her up. Make her president, goddammit. I'm sick and tired of people being worried about women pushing the button. If we can handle you goddamn kids and a period, goddammit, we can handle the nukes.
Perfect. Okay, next, Beyonce.
Oh my God, okay. I must say, I'm a late comer to the game. I'm a late adopter of Beyonce. Because I did not know there was such a thing called the Bayhive or something. And I asked my gay friends last week, I really did. I had a little party and I said, explain this Beyonce to me. She's very beautiful and gorgeous and talented. What's the obsession? I forgot to listen to the answer because what I do is I ask questions and don't care. I must say, I think she is terrific. And I say she, and this is going to be controversial. She deserves better than Jay-Z. I'm sorry, I said it. I said it. She should have four husbands. She should have four that wait on her hand and foot and do her bidding and her nails. That's it.
Preach.
And her ass play.
Yes, of course.
Oh my gosh. Chelsea Handler.
Oh my God. Okay, can I tell you? And this is public. I don't even care. Chelsea and I developed a talk show idea for me that we pitched to networks. And at the time, she was emotionally distant. And it always hit me like, wow, I never thought we were friends, but we pitched this show. So I was like, well, we're partners. And she was kind of emotionally distant. And about 3 years later, I show up to do one of her talk shows and she's super emotional and like, not, you know, upset her. She's just like, oh my God. And there was a warmth coming out of her. So okay, something's going on. Then her book comes out where she talks about all the therapy she had. And she was talking about how she was emotionally distant and the therapy broke her open and the big journey she's had. And I became obsessed with her. And I was like, and that's why we get therapy. And she really did it. So I'm like the biggest fan of her. She is a living embodiment of how you can go from that hard edge to someone who's super soft, but still funny. That's what's great about her. She can still be funny, which people are afraid, by the way, if they get help, they'll lose their talent. Mm. It never happens. They never do.
Preach.
Oh, yes.
Okay, Viola Davis.
Oh my God, I love her. Truth be told, I started her book and I had to take a break because it's really rough. It's beautifully written, but she had a traumatic childhood. And I was like, okay, it's one of those books that I go, yep, we're going to get back to that when I'm in a really good mood. Because you have to almost, but it is beautifully written. I actually sat next to her and her husband on an airplane to LA once.
Oh, wow.
And I know this. I mean, they were so cute. I kept like, because you know how JetBlue Mint, well, you guys don't know because you are poor.
Yeah.
I did Delta One once.
Yes. They have like one seat here in a pod, then two in the middle, and then another one. So I was in the one seat and then the two of them, and I kept like being like this. And I'm kind of not recognizable anymore, but I kept doing like a look over. And you know, they were kind enough to smile. But I was like, you don't want to say anything to them. Same thing happened with Emma Stone. I totally want to say hi to Emma Stone. Basically, all I have to meet is Octavia Spencer and I will have the entire Help cast. although Jessica Chastain is the best thing about that whole movie. Let's be honest. I love her. But anyway, I love Viola Davis. She's the real deal, man. Aww. She's hardcore. She's the fucking OG, man. Any day of the week. Viola, call me. We'll do work together.
Yeah.
Viola, are you listening?
Right?
Probably not.
Yeah, likely no.
Will Smith.
Oh, God. Don't get me started. I can't. I fucking can't. I can't find. Do I
you
have
want
to
pass? Find
okay. No. I'm not going to say what I don't like about him. I'm going to say something I do like about him, which is absolutely undeniable. I put off watching King Richards after the thing that happened at the Oscars because I was so upset about it because of comics being attacked is ridiculous. I put it off for 2 months. Then I said, you know what? This is supposedly great. You got to watch it. It was spectacular.
Yeah.
Roped me back in. I said, okay. But I have a real tough time separating art from artist. Like, meaning I will never listen to a Michael Jackson song again. I will never watch so-and-so, James Franco again. And I'm like, okay, that's just me. People are allowed to do what they want. But it just hits me wrong to watch someone who's done shitty stuff. But I will admit, King Richard's top shelf, freshman, also really good because of Aunt Viv.
Yes, the original.
Yes.
Cool.
Okay, Kathy Griffin.
Oh my God, Kathy. Kathy is insane in the very best way. She's so brave and uncomfortable. It makes me so uncomfortable that she fights back with everybody because I can't. And she doesn't mind when people post crappy things about her and she addresses it. And I'm like, how do you not let anything bother you? So I don't know. She said to me, that doesn't bother me. Like, she's way tougher than anyone I ever met. So I'm like, I don't have that. Like if somebody posts something shitty about me, I like totally cry. I'm all upset. I like go right in with the feelings. But boy, she's either a great actress who can pretend it doesn't bother her, or she's just a ballsy bitch. So I gotta say, I'll go with ballsy bitch for her. That's my girl.
Love that. Last one, Whoopi Goldberg.
Well, listen, she is clearly hugely talented. She has every award you could possibly get. I don't watch this View. Now, I don't like this View because I don't like hearing other people's views. I like to stay stuck in mine. So yeah. I've never liked that show. And they're a bunch of yentas talking about stuff. If I want to hear a bunch of complaining bitches, I'll stay with my Italian family. So I don't like that, Whoopi, because I don't watch it. I like her, though, because she's a kind person. I dealt with her a tiny bit on Celebrity Apprentice. She was really sweet. She was really a fan of mine, which made me almost die because I'm like, oh, my God, do you even know who the fuck I am?
Yeah.
Crazy. But she's OG, man. When she did her Broadway show and all that character work, and I'll watch, I'm sorry, but I will watch Jumpin' Jack Flash in a second. Yeah. Sister Act 73.
Yes.
All 73. That. So I'm not going to comment on The View because I want to do a show called The Rear View. And that is what I'm working on right now.
With the ass play.
Yes. That's what I was going to say. We're talking a lot about ass play, a lot about rear.
Too
what
much.
Are you thinking about, Lisa? Damn.
Oh, shit.
Thank you so much. This was so much fun. You are amazing and funny and real. So real and vulnerable. We love that about you.
Oh, my God. Thank you, guys. This really was fun. And it was cute.
I love it.
Was cruel. It was cruel.
Can you tell all... Sorry, what? Go ahead.
Go ahead, please.
I was going to say, can you tell our listeners where they can follow you and keep up on social media, websites, to keep up with your projects, whatever
you're doing?
Well,
it's so funny because I recently went private on Instagram.
I know. You didn't even follow me back. I'm pissed.
No, I don't follow people back. I don't like that. I don't care what anyone's up to other than me and maybe but no, I may unprivate it now because I had privated it a couple years ago when I felt like I just needed to really filter if anyone would say something mean. Like I can kind of handle it now a little better. So I may unprivate it. Lisa Lampanelli, just, you know, actually people, if I haven't unprivated it by the time you hear that and you want to follow me on Instagram at Lisa Lampanelli, just DM me and say, hey, I heard you on this loser podcast, Survival
Twats. Survival Twats.
That was fantastic. So just send me a DM and I will approve you because they're friends of yours and that's a friend of mine. And I really don't do Facebook and Twitter and all that. I can't be bothered. So just kind of buy tickets for Trevi. We're going to try to do this show if we like it. Again, it's all about liking it. If we like it, we're going to do a bunch of little theaters and just have fun with it. So yes, hopefully I will see you there.
Yes. And if you're tuning in because you're a Lisa fan and you don't follow us at Survival Jobs Pod on Instagram and Twitter. Send us an email at survivaljobspod@gmail.com. Follow my boy Jason at Jason A. Coombs. And I'm Sammy Toots.
Sammy Toots!
That Lisa won't follow back.
I kind of love that. Okay, I'll my follow you back.
So cute.
Wow, that is so Broadway.
Thank you, Lisa.
This was amazing.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org, because only together we rise.